Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
What's good, internet? It is March 17th, 2017, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio live from Lobby One in Vice HQ in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, New York.
Yeah. It's St. Patty's Day.
It's St. Patty's Day. Be safe.
Not St. Patrick.
The real St. Patty himself.
That's right.
Before the show, you told us that you drove the snakes out of Ireland and replaced them with dinosaurs.
Uh-huh.
And then that they were then replaced by angry internet commenters who'd read your piece about JonTron.
Yeah. It's a very
remember that.
It's the art
of the deal, please.
Yeah.
Please.
I went to Catholic school. I don't remember this part about St. Patrick's in the mysteries.
It was a very important part.
Yeah.
Because how do you think he got those snakes out of there? You know what I'm saying?
I don't recommend my path. It's a bad one.
Which path specifically?
You know, the one that went from snakes to dinosaurs to trolls.
Let's not get too specific. There's a lot of paths we could talk about.
there's a lot of paths.
That led me to being in this moment right now.
This is a good moment we're in.
It's a great moment because we're all playing a video game.
We are all playing video games.
Yeah.
As real quick, does anybody have St. Patrick's Day plans? I've reached a point in my life now where my St. Patrick's Day plans tend to be like, go inside.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
last year was a really good one for me because I became an EMT again on St. Patrick's Day.
That's
and
a
I went
bad
out
day.
And celebrated at a bar. And, you know, there were already immediately things I could do at that
to
bar.
To help people
who had drank a little too much of their green beer. But this year, I'm probably going to go to sleep.
Yeah. That's a reward. We're still, like, coming off of PAX. I feel needed a real... I like PAX. I had a good time. I got to meet people. But then, like, there's also the feeling of, like, oh, that weekend didn't happen.
Exactly.
Like, I didn't
no laundry got done. The sleep debt was not worked off. You know, the things that need to happen on a weekend didn't happen.
The sleep debt?
Yeah.
Is that like
you work off your sleep debt on the weekend.
Was that a real thing?
Yeah.
Because I never feel...
Debt?
I don't ever feel better... When I actually get,
when you get more sleep, then you are so far in debt that you're not even helping. That's probably what's going on.
Oh, boy.
Well.
I am playing a video game.
That's pretty cool. I'm playing a video. Well, I'm mostly watching. It's okay. The same deal with Horizon. I am mostly watching, playing a little, but mostly watching.
Mass Effect Andromeda is out there to some degree.
Sort of.
Obviously, there are review copies out there for outlets, but also the EA Access program has allowed people who subscribe to that to get a taste of the game.
Yeah.
It's like technically 10 hours of play, but it cuts off at a certain point in the story.
Right.
And it's like taken over social media, not in the way that I think EA would prefer.
Not the best way.
No, it's been, I have not seen, and this is, you know, something I may write about later today, but I have not seen people with knives out for a game like this in a long time. And, you know, it is no secret that people that are passionate about video games are also equally as critical about video games. Go to any comments thread, any message board, or Twitter, and you will see plenty of that. But there is a sadistic glee to Mass Effect Andromeda. And this comes from someone that has not played it, that I have my only impressions of it are I've never seen it at any demos or anything. Like,
right.
I've literally only kind of like just taking in the internet reaction to what has been put out there and what people are taking clips of. But and obviously, you know, this is all in the context of like some animations that don't look that great. Like there is a for lack of a better term, jankiness to a lot of some of the edges of Mass Effect Andromeda on a technical perspective. But the glee that people have about it is not something you usually see with criticisms of a video game. Like, there's a sort of like, ha-ha, like, fuck you, BioWare sort of element to it that I haven't quite unpacked or if this is lingering from Mass Effect 3's ending, if this is like a larger sort of BioWare's not the company they used to be. Like, I just... I'm confused at where some of this is coming from.
Do you have any theories?
Yeah, I know a lot of this, at least to my mind, I am not a scholar of this subject, but to my mind, there was a lot of pushback from certain corners of the internet about the way some of the women characters looked, like the woman Asari characters. They're
monogendered, so.
But that they weren't as hot or sexy, and there was like a whole like, oh, that SJW BioWare, they're doing all this stuff. So I remember there being some real ugliness around some of that around E3 this year and years previous.
I'm curious.
And I'm feeling some of that
like,
again.
Did that filter through into a wider culture? Because 90% of the people I'm seeing who are dunking on this game are people who themselves would be called SJWs, right? Like, it's not like the only people I'm seeing who are making fun of that character animations are people who are like, that Asari isn't hot enough. I need my Asaris all to be super bangable. Like, that's not who the people are who are like, hey, that character looks like Gumby. Like,
I don't think this is the same thing. I just know that a lot of that was already floating around.
Right.
And whether or not it's coming from the same place,
there's a concept that comes up in like contemporary theory of politics and history and economics called overdetermination, which is like, hey, things are caused from multiple sources. And sometimes you can have a priority. But this to me feels like one of those key examples of like, oh, right, like everybody might have their own little reason for wanting to do this, ranging from just like, oh, I have an interest when big projects go bad. Like, it just tickles me.
There's some of that, I think. Yeah.
To, oh, I miss the old BioWare. Like, you know.
Mass Effect, from Last Generation, this is not a scientific analysis, but there is probably no fan base more passionate, or there is no series that is looked back on as like, take away the Mass Effect 3 ending stuff aside, like if you were to like look back at that 360 PS3 generation and like pick a franchise, like Mass Effect for a lot of people, like is that series, is that emotional arc, are those characters, is those games, and so I think this is also a consequence of having a fan base like that. Like, I think there's probably an element to that, like the positives of having a fan base that is deeply invested in your world and characters and what you've built also means that fan base is going to have the knives out for you when you don't make something that they're completely happy with. But again,
I'm also seeing people in that fan base who are like, I've seen lots of fans of BioWare and Mass Effect specifically who are saying like, oh, this is really awkward for me. Like, on private accounts and to me personally and just like to each other on forums who are saying like, oh, like I really want this game to be good. Like, I really want this game to be good.
Who wants any game to be bad?
It's so hard for those people to see people just like constantly dunking on this game because they feel like, because it's the identity thing that we talked about a couple of weeks ago.
Absolutely.
I'm just like, I've poured so much of myself into BioWare, into Mass Effect, like you just said. Like, it was such a big part of a person's life for so long that like seeing the misstep, or what looks like could be a misstep, definitely stings, it seems like.
I'm almost in that category.
Yeah, me too.
I love these games. I talked about this on the stream, but I played 2, and it was like a revelation. It was maybe the last game I was honestly in love with before Breath of the Wild, and that was, what, 7 years ago now at this point?
Yep,
and then I immediately went back and played 1, and then I played 2 again. I had a whole thing with it.
I'm a 3 apologist.
These
like, I don't think 3 is as good as 1 or 2, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But I had a good time with 3.
I did too.
And even, like, was happy with the conclusion of my arc.
I was
like,
fine with synthesis.
One of those, to be clear, one of the things, like, one of the endings really was in line with one of the interests of my Commander Shepard. Like, from the jump, I was having this conversation with a friend yesterday, which was, like, from the jump, from playing Mass Effect 1, one of my entire, like, focuses for my Shepard, I kind of said, like, oh, my Shepard is interested in bringing together robots and humans and people and organic beings and like getting over this synthetic versus organic thing and blending that. And like, hey, it turned out like there was
you
a way
that.
To do that very clearly.
Oh, the so blender ending.
The blender ending.
Blender. Like, synthesis.
Green on the blender.
Right?
Yeah. And so there was definitely, for me, I was in the lucky camp of like, oh yeah, okay. Look, this is a logical conclusion to the weird Shepard in my head who was more than just Paragon or Renegade but had, like, a set of certain beliefs.
Had other things going on.
And I've obviously been doing a lot of thinking about the last Mass Effect game and, like, what they were doing, partially because I'm editing a story about the ending of it right now. Rob Zachney and I have been editing a freelance story about Mass Effect 3's ending and expectations going into Andromeda, which should go up today, actually might be up
soon.
In 15 minutes.
Very soon.
but also because I've been playing some Mass Effect Andromeda, and it's brought into stark relief what I liked about those games, and what... So I can talk about the first five, or I can talk about like the first,
right.
what the EA Access stuff is, right? Which
yes.
is like up until one of the first like dungeon areas, yeah. basically. But even in that time, there are things worth noting. So like, let's talk about the beginning of Mass Effect 1. You've both played the beginning of Mass. You've both played Mass Effect.
Yeah, yes. Mass Effect 1 is the best Mass Effect.
Do you really believe that?
It has the best story. It has the best story.
I might like it more than 2 in my heart of hearts. I've played it more than 2. I might be able to be wooed over to the Mass Effect 1 as the best Mass Effect.
Well, because generally in if I like generally media, I like the introductions to universes
yes.
than the conclusions.
Sure.
So that's just stories, maybe.
That's just stories. But so the, let's,
and it
but
has
this is,
the best story well, by far of any of the games.
Well, this so like, this
I
is
think.
The thing about Mass Effect 1 that I thought about really hard last night. You boot up Mass Effect, and Mass Effect 1 is a game that gets dragged for its opening a lot because it has this like downturn, which I'll get to in a second. So
yeah,
you boot
yeah.
up Mass Effect 1.
Mm-hmm.
You get the opening shots of Anderson talking to
the
Nihilist, to the Spectre,
oh,
right?
Or
who's
or
like,
Spectre,
is that
right,
who it
right,
is?
Right.
Or, I'm pretty sure that's who it is.
Nihilist, something.
Darth Nihilist.
Yes.
whatever,
right.
whatever the Turian is. And you say, and he's like, oh, the Shepherd person is who we need. Like, they're the best and brightest. Or like, oh, they had a hard time on a coups or whatever it is. But that's what they're doing. Like, that's why we need them. And then you go down to the planet. You meet Saren. You see
right.
him kill Nihilus. You see Sovereign in the distance. You see the husks, which were obviously in all of the trailers. And then from there, you go to the Citadel. And people don't like the Citadel because – also, there's good music on Eden
oh,
Prime.
Yeah.
Eden Prime which just has, like, dope, like, Blade Runner-esque, like, super
it's
good
– incredible.
Like, synth, like, tense, awesome music.
Yeah.
Then you get, like, the Prothean shit. So immediately – You have a bunch of stuff right at the gate. You know that there are Spectres who are like secret agents. You know that there are these ancient aliens, starring Action Bronson. You know on Viceland. You
yes.
know that there is a big weird spaceship that's
yes.
huge. That's like it's as big as the horizon itself. I've broken in my excitement. I've broken this pop filter.
Yeah, this is what happens with ancient alien tech.
I'm going to put that back there. And then,
you know the place of humans in this universe.
And you know,
immediately.
Basically, right.
Yeah.
They're not part of the council
yeah.
yet. They want to be part of the council. They want to be accepted by the larger established galactic community.
Yeah.
And you go to the Citadel. And a lot of people talk shit about the Citadel because, you can tell I've been thinking about this a lot, because the Citadel slows things down very, like, a lot.
Sure.
Suddenly, you're not talking about big galactic threats. You're talking about, like, a shitty local crime boss who's going after Tali. But then you meet who Tali is. And you learn they're the Quarians. And they're the Quarians and the Geth. Oh, what's up with the Geth? Like, the Geth are these robot people. And there's some weird relationship there.
Yeah.
Then you learn about the Hanar, who happen to be on the Citadel, which are this religious species who are preaching out in the courtyards of the Citadel. And they're like weird floating jellyfish. What's up with them? And then you meet a Krogan, and it's like a big bulky thing. And it's like, whoa, Krogans, those are wild. And then you meet the Asari, and you're like, oh, they're monogendered. And there's one who like can mind meld with you
Hell
or something.
Yeah.
That's wild. Like, awesome. Then you learn about you get all of this dump of like, oh, wow, there's so much to this world. There's
yes.
so many things that I'm learning about, and I'm learning about the different conflicts and the different relationships, the genophage, the first contact war between the Turians and the humans. There's so much to dig into there. And then there's also just like codex entries that are narrated by a dope voice of a guy who's just like, the first contact war is when the Turians first met the humans and everything went really bad. Shant Z, or whatever the name of the station was. The first 5 hours of Mass Effect Andromeda reintroduce you to all of the things you already know. It's just Asari, Turian, Krogan. Do you know Krogan's like big and they can fight?
Yeah.
And then
I'm curious how that plays to someone that maybe this is their first entry into the series. Not that that's an excuse for
totally.
Like a slow
but it's
start,
none of,
but
the thing is, none of those conflicts are here, right?
Yeah, right.
Like,
they just exist. They're just races. Yeah.
They're just races, right? Like, the Asari have magic powers, but that's all you get. You don't get much from what their history is. The only new stuff is basically weird robots that you fight
mm-hmm.
against.
Okay.
The Andromeda Initiative itself.
Yes.
Which is not super
startup.
Interesting. It's a bad startup, which is itself
Silicon
kind of
Valley,
interesting.
Silicon Valley, bad startup in space.
Right.
Kind of thing.
And one alien species that you meet out at the gate. the preview material can has shown that there's another alien species that you meet.
Yes.
One of the party members.
Yes.
But that's like it. There isn't – nothing unfolds. There's no – I played the intro to Mass Effect 1 and could say, okay, here's the one conflict my character is interested in. In Mass Effect Andromeda, every conflict comes back to these two things. It comes back to the Scourge, which is like weird dark energy is running amok in this space station. And
Uh-oh.
It comes back to – yeah, I know. Or in this space sector. And it comes back to these ancient robots. Every side quest comes back to those. Every NPC you meet has something to say. When you go to a planet in like the galactic map to get the breakdown, in Mass Effect 1 and 2, when you went to a random planet, it would say something like, oh, this is like a weird jungle planet, and it's really, it's impossible to live here because there's acidic rains, and that's what gave you the Turian expression, buying a jungle house on the planet of blah, which means doing something that looks like a good idea at the time, but is actually a really bad idea. And like suddenly there's all this great world building. In Mass Effect Andromeda, when I go to a place, it says like, oh, an asteroid crashed here because the Scourge came through. Or an asteroid crashed here, but it wasn't because the Scourge came through. It just happened to be a regular asteroid. Everything comes back to those same two plot
points. It's a little reductive. Yeah.
And because of that, it feels barren. It just feels like it's a game about the frontier that isn't doing really interesting things about the frontier. Whereas the Mass Effect 1 through 3 were games about like dense, packed, populized space. And then also outskirts that were like, smaller colonies and stuff like that. But you had that flow between the two. You had the Citadel, you had Omega, you had Ilium, you had places that were filled with life and people. And then you left those to go to Novaria or to go to Elos or whatever. And that worked in this like back and forth. But here it's all just deserts. It's all just like big open spaces or jungles or whatever that don't have enough. There's just like not enough stuff that stands on its own. It all comes back to that main plot so far. And again, in this opening, up until that first main up until the mission I'm allowed to talk through.
Yeah. I really wish, and of course this is also just talking about the stuff we're allowed to talk about, I really wish that they had leaned in heavier to more of a B-movie or more of a Western kind of theme. Like, if they had leaned into that instead of being like, oh, this is sort of like a side story or a continuation or something kind of going to the side, but it's also the grand spectacle. If they had actually just been like, actually, no, we're going to be a weird space Western, like Firefly, like you had mentioned, I would be more into this.
Me too.
It feels like there are certain ways, and my favorite parts of this game are the ways that are going towards that. The sort of like weirder characters, the quirkier characters,
like,
the kind of...
Is there someone who comes to mind in the first 5 hours?
I really
that?
Love the... Turian lady who's
Vetra.
Like kind of Vetra. She's kind of like a, I don't know, she feels like a little bit of a rogue, a little bit of a, hey, I kind of know my way around the law a little bit here. Like if it leaned harder into that, I would be happier. I actually am enjoying this game thus far, but I'm seeing vestiges of that, and it feels like, oh, we were gonna make this kind of slightly weird side story kind of deal, but then we had to make it broader and grander and fit the vision, and it doesn't quite mesh together.
Well, the thing is, I think if it was a tighter game, like, so just through those
smaller
first opening,
in scope,
yeah, literally
in
smaller
ways.
In scope, because there are lots of things where it's just like, I've often been a defender of the big empty space. I think there's value in having empty spaces that are evocative or interesting.
But they need those two things.
They need those two things.
Yes.
That was my big problem in Dragon Age Inquisition was they had access to Frostbite, built these beautiful spaces, and there just was like not a whole lot to do. Like, it was like you built something, but you gotta do, even if there's not much to do in them, then the spaces themselves need to say or communicate something. And I thought Inquisition didn't necessarily do a great job of that.
There were definitely spaces there. The thing that happened with me in Inquisition, I think I've spoken about this before, is that I played through all of the stuff in that game except for two zones, and then I did those final two zones, and they were completely side zones. They were like, there was no main story stuff there at all, and that was a drag. I think any of the zones that had main plot stuff in Dragon Age Inquisition tended to be pretty strong, and also communicated scale in a way that these early zones of Mass Effect Andromeda don't. I expected not the hinterlands. Like, I expected them to actually swing the other way from the hinterlands right. problem of Dragon Age Inquisition, which, for people who don't necessarily remember that, was this huge first area you were in that didn't do a good job of communicating to you that you needed to fucking leave it.
Get out.
To go do the rest of the
You could
cool
spend
game.
25 hours in the hinterlands, completely overlevel yourself, and then, like, wreck the scale well, of the rest of the game.
Yeah. And in the zones that you get in the opening 5 hours, opening few hours of Mass Effect Andromeda, they actually feel really linear and really, like, not linear. That's not fair. Like, the desert zone, Eos, is more open. There's a big lake in the middle. It's a desert with a big lake in the middle and some mountains and stuff. But, like, there are three pathways around it. And I think I was expecting more like Dragon Age Inquisition or more like Mass Effect 1's big, like, you go to a planet and it's this big square planet that, like, you get to drive around. I've also not seen any in this opening section, any side planets at all. There's no, like, you know, you get off of Mass Effect 1 Citadel or even, you know, you get through the opening of Mass Effect 2 and then you have the galactic map and there's side stuff to go do. Oh, there's a crashed ship. I'm going to go down to the planet and check out that crashed ship, or I'm going to board this ship. Right now, it's just like go around the galactic map and select a planet and do a scan, and often there's nothing on it at all. Yeah. There's not a great detail. And sometimes there's a thing that's like, oh, yeah, there's a lot of, you know, whatever, nitrogen here. Hit mine to get the nitrogen, and that's it. I don't know. I'm like –
It seems like it lacks a sense of wonder. Like, that's part of what I that's why Mass Effect 1 sticks with me, is like the sense of wonder and awe and discovery, like, was my favorite part of all the reveals throughout Mass Effect 1 up until, like, the conversation with Sovereign, which, like, I went back recently and looked at that again, and, like, it still gives me chills.
It's so good.
It's one of my favorite moments in a video game ever. And I think actually, like, that's part of how I convinced myself that if I was to go back to Mass Effect 1, I might, like, lose some of the how I've written it in my head canon of how I feel about that game. But that moment alone, I've rewatched before, and, like, that reveal, that conversation is, like part of what drew me into that universe and, like, made me so excited for where else it would go. And, again, having not played Andromeda, it seems like it doesn't have moments like that yet. Now, granted, that's at the end of Mass Effect 1, but there were moments like that along the way.
You get that? No, that conversation is right in the middle. That conversation is on Novaria.
Is it? Oh, okay.
The Sovereign conversation is, like, the turn. You've done two of, like, the four planets,
right.
And then you go to Novaria because there's the genophage cure that's being worked on.
Right.
And you have that whole great conversation with Rex. You get that great speech from the head of the Salarian Special Forces.
Yes.
Like, there's all sorts of, like, those moments. And
you remember this game a lot better than I do.
Yeah. Like, I want to be clear. I haven't played it since my first year in grad school.
How do you remember all these bits? What are you doing?
I love that game. Like, that game really might be one of my favorite games of all time because those moments are so strong.
Right.
And I want to be clear. I don't think that this game needs to do those things.
Yeah. No.
It is setting up a different goal for itself,
right.
Which is to be a frontier story.
Yeah.
And maybe even ideally to subvert frontier stories a little bit. Like, the notion of the shitty bureaucrat who runs the Nexus is great. Like,
it's
he's,
awesome.
You know, the guy who, like, should not be in charge of this. He's not the idealist who sees, like, the great vision for colonization, but he's also not the realist who understands that the whole thing was kind of a boondoggle and is now just trying to make the best out of a bad situation. He's kind of like an opportunist, middle manager who happened to wind up in charge of this thing. And that's, like, a really great little detail. But also, there hasn't been enough of that stuff to keep me – like, I'm intrigued because I want there to be that turn. I want there to be that moment where I'm like, oh, yeah, this is dope. But I don't know. I don't know. And also, to be clear, audience, though, the people in the chat were saying, like, oh, so the planetary exploration stuff is more like Mass Effect 2. It isn't, because in Mass Effect 2, you still occasionally got a thing that said on a random planet you would find an anomaly and drive down in your shuttle.
You would take the shuttle.
Right, and then
around.
Shoot, you know, 300 Loki mechs or, you know, a handful of Geth or some Blue Eclipse guys, and you'd find a little data pad that says, oh, this place used to be where there was a couple who met here for years, and then it turned into a Blue Eclipse mercenary group or whatever.
Yeah.
There's
Love
none
that
of that stuff in the opening hours of this game. It is all just the main plot stuff. So I don't know. For what it's worth, I am having fun like jumping around. Yeah. I think that I hit a point in my build during this opening segment. It was like, oh, I got to make a little variation on the Vanguard I always like to play. Excellent. I found a really cool pistol. There's like, again, Western style, like six shooters.
Perfect.
Called the Sidewinder.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I made...
my favorite Microsoft Windows gamepad.
Guess what? It's in here, and you can game with it.
That was one of the snakes that you got rid of on Ireland, St. Patrick. Yeah.
God.
It's perfect.
There's definitely... And it doesn't... Here's the other thing that doesn't help is I've been watching a friend play through Mass Effect 2 in the past few weeks. Like,
sure.
I literally just watched her play through Shadow Broker. And so, like,
it
goes, which doesn't hold up as well as you might think.
I'm sure it doesn't. That's the other thing. This is what, 6 years ago now that
seven.
DLC? Well, the DLC itself was like the
years.
Next year or whatever, right? So,
yeah.
And that
but
for
Mass
me
Effect
was
2
like,
was 2010.
Holy shit. Yeah. Yeah.
It's one of the things someone who writes for our site, a columnist, Jack DeKeat, made a series of tweets the other day that was about this, that like expectations have sort of moved into some regard in terms of what we should in terms of what we like just kind of naturally expect from narrative games.
Yes.
You know, like there was a when Mass Effect 2 came out, when Mass Effect 1 came out, it was 2007.
Yeah.
It was a decade ago. And like none of us had seen anything so cinematic, so focused on like obviously there had been RPGs for years and years that had lots of text, but like nothing so dedicated to the like the notion of bringing you into a place in all of the audiovisual glory, selling you that place through both like sound and graphics and writing and acting and like acting every line in that game was voice acted. Like now that might just not be enough. I don't know. That's weird. It's a weird thing.
I keep playing this game and wishing it were much smaller, much weirder, and almost like a visual novel with some other kind of, you know, a visual novel with shooting, almost.
Right,
like,
right.
And then it could be weirder, and it could have completely different story beats and completely off-the-wall characters that are not necessarily hitting the sort of archetypes that otherwise would traditionally need to.
And I wonder how much it's, you know, the original game, original series is one of the few that managed to pull off, we are a trilogy, we're starting with three games, this is the beginning of like an adventure. Like there's a reason that became a thing for a couple of years with games like Too Human, and then games quickly abandoned the trilogy promise because it was very difficult to construct stories or make those promises, especially if those first games faltered. And I wonder if, you know, they have tried in communicating what this game is to say like, oh no, I mean, yes, it's part of a larger story, but it's not like a new trilogy. But I do wonder, like, baked into Mass Effect as a concept is the idea that your actions have ripple effects beyond the game that you are playing. And setting that up is extremely difficult. And I wonder, going to do that a second time, especially when you can't do a second time, there's a secret robot you know, species that's going to extinguish the galaxy. Like
bad news, Patrick.
There's another robot species.
They're called the Remnant. Okay. I don't know what they're trying. We don't know what they're doing yet. But there's another secret robot species.
Well, I guess what I'm saying, it's
not a secret. It's in the first. It's like immediate. Like
there's another robot.
Setting up another trilogy, finding like the finding that arc a second time, given everything that the original Mass Effect chewed off. I just wonder if some of that may have presented problems to them in setting up this first game, creating its stakes. But it does sound like there are just other fundamental problems that go beyond even that larger vision and
that's
scope.
The thing is, like, I'm here to forgive the animation stuff. I'm here to say, like, the presentation. Like, that's not the stuff that's going to keep me from loving this game and putting it in my you know, the canon of games I really love. It's not going to be like, oh, the faces were a little wonky.
Yeah,
like,
look at Nier. Nobody like loves Nier because like I nailed all that stuff. Like, no.
The game
like,
I fucking love is all of the Elder Scrolls games.
Hell
those
yeah.
faces look bad.
I mean, some of the older Mass Effect faces look bad.
Right.
The Shepard, the male Shepard smiling thing, like, who, remember that one? Like, that was rough.
It's bad.
You know?
So, like, that's not the thing. For me, the thing is going to be, you talk, Patrick, about how in the first game there was that promise made that there was going to be this trilogy. And for me, when I started playing, and I'm just repeating myself here, but when I first started playing Mass Effect 1, I could immediately see why there would be a trilogy. Oh, yes. Boy. Genophage. Wow, the Krogans, they have like a 1% fertility rate now because another species did that to them? Ooh, that's going to take a couple games to unpack.
Yeah.
I ain't going to fix this one. Like, that one will be a while.
We're going to need some more than some DLC. That's at least two season passes.
That's at least two season passes. We're going to need a sequel game for this. Oh, the species made robots as their slaves, and then the slaves turned on them, and now everyone hates the robots? Okay, we're going to need...
I just see you... were you just sweating profusely the entire time you were playing this game? Just going, oh boy, oh no. This is a lot, Mass Effect.
And then I got one comic, it was like, oh, the Rachni are a thing. The species that was like...
wiped out.
The Krogans, who were the chemically...
Sterilized.
Whole species... was chemically sterilized, was also exploited to commit genocide against another whole species. That's going to take a couple of games.
Yep.
And obviously, a lot of that took a lot of time to get to those points.
Yes.
But many of those conflicts were set up out of the gate, and I could immediately see why something would take three games. I have no idea what two sequels from now the
Dark
Andromeda
Energy
game is going to be interested in. It's going to be Dark Energy, or it's going to be like these other aliens who are the bad guys that we don't know anything about.
It's
going to
be PB's heel turn is what it's going to be. PB, you know, she's wearing the makeup that says Pris from Blade Runner. She's going to take a heel turn.
Maybe that's what's going to
happen. I mean, if it gets that weird, I'd be so happy.
I would love that.
It would be wonderful.
But I don't think it's going to.
And the Genophage is one of like the most interesting like storylines like I have ever like
it's
wrestled
good.
With in a video game, and especially the way that like it comes to a head in the third game, and like the acts you take participating and observing that whole situation. Like, it would like all the problems you guys are talking about or are being talked about with Andromeda, like if there's nothing that tries the – I'm not saying there needs to be Genophage 2.0.
No.
But like the ambition of that storytelling and the ethical implications both for the galaxy, the universe, and your role in engaging with it. What I think people wanted out of a new Mass Effect was to have that ambition
again.
Another time.
Yeah.
To find a way to that complex moral and ethical and like – storytelling complexity, that's like what defines a lot of what I found interesting about Mass Effect. Like, the Reapers, sure, interesting, but like, it was that stuff that was like real people, real races, like interacting in a complex fashion that you can imagine how fucked up things like that would happen.
Right.
That's what I wanted out of a new Mass Effect, was like another thing that reminded me of the complexity of that, where they're. You can see the actors on both sides, and
they both mean well, and blah blah blah. Right,
like,
or the thing is, like, or this game could go the other way, which is it could commit to being a small. It is smaller scale in the notion of just like it again is not interested in a world filled with millions and millions and billions of people. Yeah. Right, like,
and the whole saving the universe. Though.
Right, and also not saving the universe. Right, the arc is filled with 20,000 human lives. That's a lot of human lives.
Yeah.
It's nothing compared to what the stakes of the original Mass Effect trilogy were, which were billions of lives, right? And also it just means that the worlds are just never going to be as populated as Mass Effect, and especially Mass Effect 2, which had all of the like vaguely cyberpunk stuff on Omega and on Ilium, where it's like, oh wow, huge city planets and like flying cars. Like, that's just not what this game is going to do, and that's okay. But at that point, it needs to be able to offer something else that really leverages the smaller scope of the Helios cluster of the Andromeda galaxy. It needs to be able to show the frontier in an interesting way. It needs to make empty spaces feel empty in a way that makes you look out at them and say, like, oh boy, we're all alone out here, huh? It's just us. Something like that really empathizes. And there are a couple of things that I think it does that well with. One of the things I do like is that the crew members on your ship will chatter with each other from like across the hall. They'll shout like down from a higher level down
that's
to someone
good.
Else who's working on a thing.
Yeah.
And like, okay, that's making this space feel intimate in a way that the Normandy could never feel because it's too big. But the worlds themselves and the mission design don't necessarily feel that way for me. And we'll see. I am really hopeful that they're still going to, they're going to pay off on something, that they're going to hit a thing or like, that's really fucking clever, or that like they're trying to do the, this is a bad step in an attempt to fix the problem with the hinterlands, which is like, we're going to give you a really narrow opening 20 hours, 15 hours, 10 hours, instead of giving you the one where you can get lost for all that time. We're going to make sure it's the stuff that we need you to see, and
the,
then it'll
the
open
opposite
up.
Of Final Fantasy 15.
Right, right. Maybe the back half is the good half. It's the Final Fantasy, what was it, 13? Is the one that did the other, did the, like,
yeah,
oh, you got it through the first 20 hours.
For, like, the first 30 hours, yeah.
I don't know.
It's
don't
weird
know.
To me, just as I'm thinking about it, I'm thinking about the arc I've had with the series,
yeah.
That it seems, the more interesting it is narratively, it's gone, like, inversely in terms of how satisfying it is to play the actual
right.
shooting mechanics. Like, it's this one is, I'm having a lot of fun with the actual shooting
right.
and the actual sort of the way you have a little bit more control
mobility
over your powers and
yeah.
exactly that stuff. The first game, which I loved to death, it played a little bit like a mess, and that's
yeah.
fine.
They'd
like,
never made a game with
great.
Guns before.
Right.
So,
they, you know, they...
That's not
there
true
was a
exactly,
lot of shooting at
yes.
the floor by your squad mates. That kind of thing.
There's a lot of
thing.
Aiming up a shot and then not getting any damage because it was that's the sort
there
of game it
a
was.
A lot of that in that first game. And now it's like, oh, this is really fun to shoot things. But what these games do best is not necessarily shooting things. For me, it's always been that character interaction
right.
and that the feeling of like, oh, I'm in this incredible sort of Battlestar Galactica / Star Wars-ish universe and making all these decisions. So it's very... I don't know. I just want them to lean into the weirdness.
Yeah.
Lean into the weirdness.
Or lean into, like, I almost want it to be a procedural. Like, I almost, when
sure,
I said the other
yes.
day while playing that, it, like, I would like it to have been more like, or it feels like it wants to occasionally be like Firefly. It aspires
totally.
To that tightness.
Yeah.
And I almost want there to just, I want there to be more throwaway episodes. I want to go to a weird space colony and have to, like, deal with whatever the interesting culture is there. And maybe that stuff is coming, but right now, but if it does, it will just be more humans and Asari and Taurians.
Right.
Or maybe it won't. Maybe there's all sorts of aliens still in this galaxy that we haven't met in the first 5 hours, 10 hours, whatever the thing is. And like,
just give me Ace Attorney, Mass Effect.
That'd be cool.
That would be really
but,
fun.
Yeah. I also wonder if people would like this game more if it had come out in the first trilogy's like lifespan as just a side story.
Definitely.
Or if people wouldn't be so eager to hate on it.
I think that's
yeah. If,
sure.
if it was like yeah. yeah, if it was like something in between 2 and 3, it was like, hey, yeah. we're off trying something else, and here's this other kind of side story that isn't like this is the new Mass Effect. Like
right.
that just kind of carries with it a grandiosity that, especially given this is largely like this isn't the team that made Mass Effect 1, 2, and 3.
Right.
This is a new team. This is like there are people that were
yes.
involved in that, but it is not. The team that built 3 did not say, all right, time to make a new Mass Effect. Like, that's not
right.
how this pivot worked. And so, you know, if you want to be charitable, you can also look at Mass Effect Andromeda as, I think, some people looked at Halo 4 as like, okay,
sure.
the first one you make is really training wheels. Like it's,
and it's hard.
And it's hard.
It's
like,
not
just
easy.
Pure
yeah.
imitation is difficult. And so, you know, granted, maybe things get a lot more interesting as you get further into the game, and
yep.
maybe there's some interesting side quests, and it is, you know, the Mass Effect series historically has a pattern of having, like, really amazing season pass, like, DLC that, like, goes
right.
in fascinating directions. Maybe some of that stuff's there, but there's also a world in which you can imagine, and again, this is sort of being charitable, and also I haven't played it, but that this one was, like, them, okay, we know
yeah.
how to make one of these games. Where do we go from here?
Yeah.
Sure.
Let's go into the question bucket.
Take a little dip.
That's
Take
where
a little
we're going
dip.
From here.
That's
Taking
where we're going
a little
from
dip
here.
From
into
here.
The question bucket. I need a number from 1 to 124.
St. Patrick's Day. Go for it, Patrick.
What'd you say? It's 124?
Something like that.
101.
101. 101. 101. 101.
Nice. 101
here.
Level.
All right. This, I'm scrolling. I'm at 84. That was about World War II. Here we go. This one comes in from Nick from Philly, who says, Hey, Waypointers. Regarding your discussion of politics and gaming, I thought I would offer up some of what I've been struggling with in the midst of an ongoing, unsettling political news cycle. I don't know when this came in, but let me tell you, it's still relevant.
It's relevant.
I often find myself feeling guilty for discussing games or even playing them while so much evil shit is going on in the real world. I'll ask myself, does it really matter to me which game wins best graphics from a website when they're trying to take away healthcare from people? I remind myself that occasional escapism is okay and part of healthy self-care routine, and it's okay to unplug for the news for a bit. I can still be informed, but maybe a little stressed. I would love to hear how you all practice this. Do you find yourself struggling with the same feelings? And what have been some go-to games for you when you feel the need to unplug from political discourse hell ride? From this political discourse hell ride? Thank you so much, Nick from Philly.
I think as someone who left working at the ACLU to do game journalism full time, I sure feel this.
Yeah, I bet.
I sure do feel this quite a bit sometimes, and just feel like, wow, I'm the lucky asshole who gets to kind of have fun all the time while other people are cleaning up, you know, and trying to be on the ground and fight and so on and so forth. What I do is try to balance things as best I can. I volunteer, and that's been helpful for me to do in terms of just feeling like, okay, I'm not only doing this job that is a wonderful job, but I'm getting out and helping my community and doing things like that. I definitely encourage people to do that if that's in the cards for you, if you're able to do that, if you're, you know, in a position of privilege and have the time to do that. Sure helps me, and otherwise donations or whatever you can do. I find that incredibly therapeutic as like a, hey, you know what? I care about the world. Maybe I can't 100% devote my time to this right now, but here's me making a contribution, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And obviously, clearly think there's a lot of value to games, and I think there's a lot of value in self-care. And quick answer for, you know, the go-tos. I sure love a nice chill puzzle game when I'm feeling real bad. Definitely. Like a nice – something I can just chip away at and find a solution and feel good about that. That is A+.
Zelda has been really great for me for that. Yeah. Obviously, I think that game is just fantastic. But also, one of the things about that game that I haven't gotten around to writing about yet because who has the time is that it is a fundamentally hopeful game.
Yes.
Like a lot of bright, colorful Nintendo games are. But it also is built on a premise, which is that we fucked up, right? Like, I'm not going to get deep into Zelda spoiler territory here, but, you know, Link awakens from the Shrine of Resurrection or whatever. That's the first thing in the game. And he kind of goes out into the world and learns that things used to be better and that there was, in an attempt to prepare for something bad, things got way worse. There are bad policy decisions made in the land of Hyrule.
Sure.
There was investment in military. There was like the misunderstanding of what the way forward was supposed to be. There were personal failings and political failings.
The Hyrule Ganon Protection Act.
Yeah.
Riddled with flaws.
Sure.
Riddled with flaws. Let me just say, they should have maybe invested more into non-military functions.
Education,
not enough subsidies in that.
Education,
healthcare,
you know, the Triforce.
Infrastructure,
right.
Maybe a little bit.
History, like all for education, a lot of things. You're right.
Yeah.
And for me, that game was really interesting because it gave you insight into what people 100 years after a disaster, like how they thought about that disaster and thought about you in context of that disaster, and then also tried to figure out a way to say, like, there is, and I don't think this is like an astounding narrative game or anything, but it evoked it had a tone of this hope that was grounded in the reality of failure, that like every sunrise was a reminder that you could try to right the wrongs of yesterday, and it did that by literally having dope sunrises, like that's, and by seeing a field filled with like ruined war machines, like, oh wow, yeah, lots of people died here. we really need to do better at this. And the way that you do that, obviously, is the Zelda game is like, oh, I'm gonna go talk to all the different races and like make all the cultures come together and help out, and like that's a very naive, simple politics, but it was still like that in like great middle ground between escapism and connection to some real world issues.
And I guess for me, well, one, like, distance from an event helps, right? So like in the immediate wake of like the election, it was extremely difficult to want to write little frivolous things about some little thing you found in a game. You know, that happens at all different times in life. Like, whether you have a death in a family or something like that. Like it puts in context sort of like what you're doing and what your purpose is. And sometimes it can feel very frivolous and difficult to sort of get back on that horse. But like for me, one of the ways that I try and deal with that sense of, I'm focused on writing about video games on a daily basis is to try and like find stories that mean something. Like it's a way of pushing myself to try and find stories that are worth telling. So like where sometimes you can feel frivolous to talk about like, I really hate this shotgun in Destiny or something like that. Well, it's like, well, writing that story like I did recently about the man who was suffering from cancer and wanted to go to the lighthouse in Destiny and telling his story and what kind of person he was and what that game meant to him and how the people in his life perceived what that game meant to him. Like that imbues the importance of video games for people in a way that makes me feel like it was a story worth telling and also underlines why video games are important to different people or why video games are important. And so finding those stories, not all of them have to be about people dying necessarily, but finding stories that are about the importance of games to people is one way. Those are my favorite stories to tell and are also serve as reminders for myself of, okay, like there's a balance in all of this, and telling those stories makes me feel better about – it feels like I am contributing something that is more than just like something that's going to turn into, you know, an argument on a message board. It's like, right. I feel like right. this speaks to the larger power of video games in a way that's important.
Yeah. I think that is like in general trying to find a way to – anytime that we're like, how do I make meaning for myself in this chaos is a moment when we should do our best to be – really engaged with that and do our best to actually do that instead of like flailing in the like terrible maelstrom of nonsense and disaster and ruin. Like try to find a little corner of it and like shape it into something you can be happy with.
Absolutely.
And also like figure out ways to like literally try to address the entire thing, like you said, Danielle, and like volunteer or find a charity, find a thing that you are interested in addressing and helping. Focus on that one thing. We've said this before. Don't try to take on the world yourself. You will lose your – will just like – it's bad.
Burnout is real.
Burnout. Is it? Yeah.
It sure is.
It sure is.
I think maybe you know about that.
A little bit.
A little bit.
Burnout. I think it's going to do it for us this week. Please have a safe and comfortable St. Patrick's Day.
Yes.
Have a relaxing...
Please don't drink too much. And if your friends do drink too much, know that you can always call 911 and a very nice EMT will come help you.
See that? That's perfect.
PSA.
PSA.
Right? Too much green beer? Ba-da-da. Call a cool EMT who's near.
N-I-E-R? Like from the game series?
They could be an android.
Yo, that game is good. Patrick and I,
yeah, we'll talk about that on Monday maybe, because I'm going to play a lot more of that this weekend.
Yeah.
But, yo... Nier just went live on Steam. Do not sleep on this game. This is going to be the game that people at the end of this year are screaming about. Like, why did you motherfuckers play Nier? Like, that's the game that people are going to be screaming about at the end of this year. Don't be that person. Or rather, be the person that's screaming.
Be the scream.
Yes, be
screamer.
The scream you want to see in the world.
Be the scream you want to see in the world. True. On that note, we are gonna head out of here. Thank you to Tim Barnes producing it. Thank you to Dylan. Thank you to Bowen, who lets us use his track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. Find out more info about that song, which you're going to hear in a second, at waypoint.zone/BOEN. You can also find everything we do at waypoint.zone, waypoint.vice.com,
yes.
digitalpyramids.com, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You can
All
find
those.
Me at Austin_Walker. Danielle, where can people find you?
Danielle R.I. on Twitter.
Patrick Klepek.
Find what me playing you? These games.
Patrick just dropped all the Jurassic Park games that ever existed on his head.
You can find me at Patrick Klepek on Twitter.
At Patrick,
too.
Patrick Klepek on Twitter. Make sure to come back on Monday, because we'll be back here doing more Waypoint Radio.
Near
but
day.
Also, yeah, what's near day?
Near day
of
Monday.
Of course. We'll say today's date is 3/17, so that means Monday will be 3/21. Of course, near day.
There you go.
3/21, near day.
3/21, it's in,
put
near
it,
day.
Add it to your calendar. Celebrate that shit every year.
Absolutely.
Every year we'll just do, it's like Calvin Ball. It's the Calvin Ball of holidays. It's just like, who knows what the rules to near day are? Make it up as you go along.
Change.
Add a new fucking tradition every year. It's like game doesn't make any goddamn sense. It's cool. And then, also, if you're in the chat right now, don't go anywhere, because we will be back in a moment with a special guest. And if you're listening to this after the fact, we are going to just so you know, we're going to stream a video game. You should go to Waypoint. You go to youtube.com/waypointvice to watch the archive, which should be up by Monday, probably.
Yeah, on Deer Day. Yeah, it'll be
on Deer Day. Yeah. Did you say Deer Day?
Near. I said near, but you know.
Deer Day is 3/22, Danielle. Obviously, not 3/21.
I'm sorry. There's Near Day. There's Deer Day.
There's Deer Day.
And there's Fear Day.
And there's Fear Day.
Ugh. I don't know what that one is.
I'm going to hang up on this call.
Good.
And go get coffee and then come back and
That's
do a stream.
A great
so stick
idea.
Around. Thank you, everyone who's listening to us. We'll see you on Monday. Peace.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.